Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Everyone, welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I'm too scared to watch scary movies.
Not this week, though.
Not this week.
I'm Henley. I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies.
Hell yeah.
If you can believe it.
That's who we are, if you can believe it. What's been going on with us this week?
Guys, I have been really diving into the thrilling world of Los Angeles City Council meetings, and
you are doing the work that we all should be doing, and I appreciate that.
It's I don't know that I'm actually doing anything. I'm just trying to learn how it all works, and stay aware of what's happening. I think for me, what's made things feel manageable is focusing on one. Like choosing a focus area. And so I'm pretty focused on defunding LAPD and mm-hmm. LASD.
A very good one to focus on.
Because mm-hmm. their budget is due in July 1st. So it's a time sensitive issue. But mm-hmm. man, oh man, they really try to bore you out of paying attention. They make it as boring as possible. Then there's usually a public comment section where people call in and give their opinions, which have come to be very entertaining. People love to yell at our elected officials for not doing their jobs. And a good signature line that has become a real through line for a lot of the public comments is ending it by saying, "I yield my time, fuck you."
Yeah, I really, mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed that. I yield my time, fuck you.
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, it's good. It's really, the first time I listened to a meeting and got to hear all of that, boy, did it really
drain
help
you.
Me release a lot. Drain me, but yeah. At first it invigorated me and then it drained me.
Yes, yes.
But just hearing people be like, fuck you, fuck you, to people who you think are doing a bad job is like really cool.
Yeah.
All of us. Yeah. I feel like a local government is so mysterious in a lot of ways because I have never been involved in it and no one I know has ever really been involved in it.
Right.
And I feel like there's so much opportunity there. Like, why aren't we all more involved?
Yeah, it's where we have the most power to, like, as individuals to influence our surroundings, and so I encourage everyone to start.
Let's fucking get in there.
Your neighborhood councils,
let's
too.
Get in there.
Like, people have power to do shit. And mm-hmm. You just—it's just really boring to get involved.
Hey guys, go out there, get involved. You're gonna hate it, but you gotta. It's important.
It's important. What's up with you guys? How's your week been?
Mine's been pretty okay. I am just going to give a short little plug for Avatar The Last Airbender. I am fully hooked. It's for anyone who doesn't know, crazy if you don't know. But for anyone who doesn't know, it's the animated series that's now available on Netflix. Originally came out on Nickelodeon in 2005. It's a fantastic meditation on friendship and bravery and how to be like a good person.
That sounds nice.
That sounds so nice. A meditation on friendship and bravery.
And also the animation's really fucking cool. So I highly recommend
I'm sold.
Checking out Avatar The Last Airbender.
I'm watching it tonight.
Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix.
Sponsor us.
Sponsor us. Avatar The Last Airbender. Sponsor us. It'll be you, the Italian bakery in Eagle Rock, and Sleep Cove. Our sponsors.
Can't wait.
I guess I'll do a little plug for, I recently got back into my Enneagram types.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I feel like, have we talked about that on the podcast?
I love that shit.
I love that shit. I love to be given a way to think about myself in a way that's like, ooh, what if it's this? You know, like, I guess the like non-vain way to express that would be like understanding yourself better. And in relationships, and it's why I think astrology is really cool, but I don't know as much about it as, say, Sammy does. But I really like thinking like, okay, how do you express yourself, or what are your motivations, or how do you relate to other people? And I think it's cool. Anyway, I've been getting back into Enneagram. I listened to a podcast this morning while I took a little walk. That was a delving into my Enneagram number, which is number 3. Pretty strong 3. The first time I read my description, I cried. And I listened to it today, and like as I was walking and listening, she literally was like a 15-minute snippet of this woman who she studies Enneagram. And every time she said something about threes, I truly out loud was like, yeah. Like I just like really like so deeply resonates. I just think it's very cool. And the cool thing about Enneagram is it's all about like your inner self, as opposed to Myers-Briggs is a lot about your external, or like, more, you know, personality based.
Right.
Enneagram is driven on like, what's your basic motivation? And then what's your basic fear?
Yes.
If when you find what your number is, it really, really gets at the core of you. So I recommend it. So if you guys want to look into your Enneagram type, find your number. It's fascinating, and I recommend it.
I love it. Listeners, drop your Enneagram number in the comments.
Oh my god, please do. Honestly, I really
and let us
ooh,
know
I do
your
love it.
Astrological sign too while you're at it.
That too, please. Yeah. Well, you know what else is up with me this week?
You watched a movie.
I watched the movie. Which we haven't said what it is yet, but this week's movie is Scream.
Woo-hoo.
Scream. Woohoo. Which I've always wanted to watch, and truthfully did sort of watch at Halloween this year. Sam, you had it on at your house in the background. We all sort of ended up watching it at one point. So I did know who the killer. I knew that in watching it this time, and I had seen some moments, which I think is why I was like, oh, I could watch this. And it's great. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. I know you hate when horror movies are described as fun, Henley, but it's fun. Sorry, sue me.
That's why I wanted to watch it. I didn't get a chance to this week, but I had seen part of it at Sammy's, and I've seen parts of it in other times too, but it looks fun. Also, the fashion moment is undeniable.
The fashion moment is undeniable.
96,
it came out in 1996, so it's a very 1996. When I was thinking about it today and rewatching to take notes, Scream is going to be 25 years old next year. That's
wow.
That's like not okay with me, but it is what it is.
We're old.
It is what it is.
It's peak Courtney Cox.
Oh god. And it was just her birthday. Happy birthday, Courtney.
Happy birthday, Court, fellow Gemini. Shout out to all my Geminis out there.
A Gemini queen. I do just love her. So Scream, 1996, directed by Wes Craven. Written by Kevin Williamson, starring Neve Campbell, Skeet Ulrich, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, Matthew Lillard, Jamie Kennedy, Drew Barrymore, who is the top billed actor in this movie, and she is not in it for long. And lots of other people, Henry Winkler at one point. I mean, the cast.
Great cast.
It's a stellar cast.
It's a stellar movie. I love this movie. Yeah. I've seen it many times, but I'd say this was my first time rewatching it since I've kind of developed this stronger appreciation for horror in general. And so it was a super fun rewatch, and it's incredibly rewatchable, I'd say.
Yeah, it really is a super fun movie. It is scary. Like, I mean, it's scary in a way that I can handle, which is
it's not, I mean, I don't think necessarily going to give you nightmares.
Right.
Had I watched this 10 years ago, absolutely would have given me nightmares. Had I watched it probably 3 years ago, it would give me nightmares. But it doesn't stick with you super hard. I did watch it last night in, when it was dark out. But I did the thing where I was like watching it and also like had my phone up so I could, you know, like, ooh, I'm just going to like send a text or like, I'm just going to like open up Instagram and do that thing where I'm like, yeah, I'm like sort of watching, but I'm sort of not. And then today when I was taking notes, even though it was daytime, I was watching more closely and I got scared sometimes.
It is scary. So,
I think this is the type of movie that scares me even more than something like The Descent scares me, which I know sounds crazy, but like it's the idea of someone being outside of your house, like looking through your windows, just ready to brutally murder you.
And that does happen in this movie.
And that stuff is truly so. Those are the scariest moments when you can see them like looking out the window to try to see who's there.
I hate that.
But I think maybe just because of the ending, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that won't be me. But I don't know. I'm glad to have seen it and I want to watch the rest of them. Are they good?
I remember really liking Scream 4 because that's the one I've seen most recently besides this one.
There are four of them?
Yes.
Jesus.
There's a fifth one coming out by the same people who made Ready or Not, right?
Yes, yes. So David Arquette is the only one currently signed on to it.
Great. Oh, you love to see it.
But I imagine more will follow suit. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Also, spoiler alert, guess who lives from Scream 1? No.
Sound of that tune means it's time for Cocktail Hour. Hello, I am your new bartender taking over for Sammy. And seeing as I watched the scary movie this week, I could definitely use a cocktail. This week's cocktail is The Stab in the Back. Truthfully, most of these stabbings in this movie happen in the front, but stab in the front is not a common saying, so here we are. For this drink, you are going to need 1.5 ounces of orange juice, 1/2 ounce of brandy, 2 ounces of dry white wine, and 2 ounces of club soda. This is a highball style drink, so very light and refreshing for the summer. You will build all ingredients in a highball glass over ice, topping last with the club soda, and you will garnish with an orange slice. And there you go. Good luck to all of us, and cheers.
Should we do some trivia of this movie?
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple little guys. One is that the use of caller ID, I don't know how they have this statistic. It's not, is it even a statistic? The use of caller ID increased threefold after this movie came out.
Oh, yeah, because he calls.
Which I guess makes sense. He calls a lot. You would now, you know, you'd want to know.
Where's that call coming from?
You'd want to know. Where's the call coming from? As a side note, did this ever happen to you guys in middle school where I'm very clearly putting a time stamp on when I was in middle school? But it was around when we all were getting caller ID and thought it was cool and great to have. And did you ever get like 3-way secret called?
Oh, of course.
Oh my God.
In middle school?
Yes.
Of course.
I thinking about caller ID reminded me of a time I got 3-way secret called trying to ask if I liked a boy. My friend who was friends with this boy, he was a boy at the time, called to ask me if I liked him. And they had secret 3-way called me, so he was on the line. But they did it the wrong way. And so the boy who he was asking me about, his caller ID came up. And I was like, are you at his house? And he was like, no. And then I learned later they were secret 3-way calling me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you were kind of on the good side of that happening, though.
It happened other times. That was just one that I
I blocked all of them out, but I definitely know I had some horrendous, traumatic.
Awful. It's just another way for middle schoolers to be like absolute
middle
assholes.
School kids are so shitty.
So shitty. Anyway, anyway, tell us in the. Listeners, tell us if you got secret 3-way called mm-hmm. and your astrological sign and the mm-hmm. astrological sign of who secret 3-way called you. Another trivia that I have, my last little one. So the end of the movie is basically one long party. Like most of the movie takes place in this party or, you know, party of sorts. And that scene is 42 minutes long. And apparently it took 21 days to shoot that scene. All night shoots. So they did 21 night shoots in a row to film the final scene of that movie. and which is brutal. And so apparently the crew afterwards had t-shirts made that said, "I survived scene 118," and they all got those t-shirts as gifts to celebrate finishing shooting that long, long scene.
That's
which
fun.
Is fun. That's a little behind the scenes.
I love it.
Sort of situation.
Should we watch this trailer?
Let's watch a trailer.
I'm excited.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Everybody's a suspect! You're not scared, are you?
Squeak.
Oh my god, that looked so fun.
That trailer is so... The trailer makes it... Like, the tone of that trailer is not quite the tone of the movie, I don't think, but it is...
That trailer is all over the place.
That trailer is all over the place. It's... Man, it's really fun. I'm really excited to be taking the lead on this retelling. Sam, you've seen it, so you're gonna help me out, but I'm gonna try to do it justice. I will say, it's so funny how, again, like, Drew Barrymore is in this movie for 7 minutes, if that, and she's huge on the poster. Like, well, it's mostly her face.
So this was like a huge time for Drew Barrymore. It, like, this was, she was super famous at this time, and so that was like a big misdirect. So she was actually cast as Sydney, and that's, I guess, why Wes Craven signed on. And then she convinced Wes Craven to let her play this part because she's like, people will be so shocked because they thought they were coming to, like, see a movie starring Drew Barrymore. So it's a real, it's a trick.
Brilliant idea. It's great. It's such a trick. I mean, it's like a very classic thing that I knew going into it, but that's such a good trick. And how cool of Drew Barrymore to be like, this is a better idea.
Yeah.
I wonder if she got paid the same amount and had to work like a tenth of the days.
Also, I would bet that she got paid generously, but also it's not like she needed the exposure. Right. So, like,
right.
I mean, hey, Neve Campbell ended up, you know, having a franchise. So let's just get right into it.
Let's get into it. I also do want to just point out that this movie has been parodied so many times that I feel like I've even seen, like, car commercials that make fun of Scream. And, like,
right.
It's just everywhere. This movie has been so infused into, like, everything that I grew up with that watching that trailer was just like, oh, I'm coming home.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is welcoming. It is just like coming home. I will say, this opening scene, I'd never seen it in its entirety until fucking yesterday, but I was so scared of it. And I'm, like, so aware of this scene. It's very, very scary.
Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look, we gotta be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you, because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes, variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
Mm-hmm. So it starts off with Drew Barrymore, character name Casey. She answers her phone. Her phone rings in her house phone. She answers it. Caller has a weird voice to her in the trailer like, hello, who is this? and she's like, well, who are you? He said, well, who are you? Like, just being like very suspicious and weird. And she says, oh, I think she's so like bubbly and like, oh, I think you have the wrong number. And he's like, do I? She's like, yeah, it's okay. No worries. Bye. And hangs up like, no big deal. Calls right back. She picks up. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, you have the wrong number again.
I know. I called to apologize.
Oh, no worries. It happens. Hangs up again. Like, she is unfazed. He calls back again. Then this point, third time, she's like, oh, phone's ringing again. Okay. She answers the phone. He manages to keep her on the line. That time, he just starts talking to her. He's like, what's that noise? What are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm making popcorn. and he's like, oh, why make a popcorn? Why are you making popcorn? Oh, I'm just going to watch a video.
Oh, yeah? You're going to watch a scary movie?
Yeah. What are you going to watch? Oh, just some stupid scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Listeners, hang up at this point.
Hang up at this point. Earlier, it was one of the phone calls. I think it might have been the one of the ones where she hung up before this. Where
he's like, don't hang up. I want to talk to you.
She's like, there are 900 numbers for that. Ha ha. Like, you're being flirty. No, he is being terrifying. but he says,
what's your favorite scary movie?
Because Halloween, you know, the one where the guy comes and stabs a bunch of Home Alone babysitters. Girl, get off the phone. she says, what's your favorite scary movie? He goes,
guess.
I don't know. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that the one with the guy who has knives for hands?
She's like, yeah, Freddy Krueger. He says,
so ridiculous.
So do you have a boyfriend?
And she's like, why do you want to know? You want to ask me out? Just like, now she's having fun. Now she's having a great time. And he goes,
So what's your name? You never told me your name.
She says, well, why do you want to know my name? And she's like walking through her house as she does. And she's making popcorn, talking on the phone, walks by like those classic suburban sliding glass doors that lead out to her backyard.
Way too many windows in this house. Way too many.
So many windows. It's nighttime. There's too many windows.
And no curtains.
Wide open. Wide open. So she's like, well, why do you want to know my name? He goes, because I want to know who I'm looking at. Then she gets scared.
Fucking scary.
And it's very scary. And she goes like, she hangs up, finally goes and like locks the door, like locks the sliding glass door and goes and like tries to lock some other doors. He calls again, as we knew he would. And she immediately picks up and is like, look, don't call. And he goes, no, you look. Then now he gets rid of the like sexy voice, but is still like weirdly sort of distorted. And he goes, no, you look. If you hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish.
Oh, so she stays on the phone. It.
Yeah, he ramps it right up.
I hate it.
It's no good. And like at one point she turns the porch light on. There's nothing out there. Turns it back off. But he's like, don't hang up on me again. We're going to play a game. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm going to call the police. No. Hangs up. Then the doorbell rings. Front doorbell. She from inside the door goes, who's there? No one answers. She picks up the phone to call the police. It rings in her hand. She screams, answers it. And he goes, you should know better than to ask who's there. So like he purred her because proof he is at her there. House. Proof that he's there, which we do not love. She's like, that's classic stupid mistake. Don't ask who's there. And don't overlook. It's like as stupid as going out to like check on your porch to see if there's someone around. Maybe something else that will happen at some point. I don't know. And she's like, my boyfriend is going to be here any minute. And he's big and he plays football and he'll kick the shit out of you. And he goes, I thought you said you didn't have a boyfriend. She's like, I do. I have a boyfriend. And he'll be here in a minute. And he goes, his name wouldn't have to be Steve, would it? Hey, guess what? It is. it is Steve. She starts crying and he goes, turn the porch light on again. Or no, he goes, why don't you turn the porch light on again? So like he also saw her turn the porch light on before. Turns it on. Steve is tied up in his Letterman jacket. Football Steve could not kick the shit out of whoever this is. Tied up in a lawn chair on her patio. He's bloodied. He's clearly been like beaten up. He's got duct tape over his mouth and is like crying and like screaming. And the guy on the phone's like, okay, so we're going to play a game. And if you don't play, Steve's going to die. So you better play and you better answer this question right. I'm going to keep it easy. It's going to be movie trivia. And she's like crying the whole time and pleading with him and like, please don't do this. Please don't do this. And he's like, okay. I'll start it off easy. What's the name of the killer in Halloween? She says, Michael Myers. He goes, good. That was a warm up. Here's the real question. Answer correctly or Steve dies. What's the name of the killer in Friday the 13th? And she goes, Jason. His name is Jason. He goes, wrong. The killer is Jason's mom, Mrs. Voorhees. And she's like, no, I've seen the movie 20 times. It's Jason. It's Jason. He's like, if you've seen it, you'd know. I'm going way too into the weeds of this movie. Oh boy, we're gonna be here forever. he goes, anyway, wrong. If you really knew, you'd know that in the first movie it's Ms. Voorhees, and then Jason Nolan shows up in the sequel. We hear a noise and he guts Steve, cuts open his stomach, guts.
Oh, I hate that. I hate
spill out all over the ground. She's screaming and crying, and he goes, okay. Next question. This is for you. This is for your life. What door am I at?
Ooh.
Very bad question. And then as she's standing by the glass doors, like freaking out, holding the phone, a chair gets thrown through the sliding glass doors. So she runs away from those. She runs and gets a knife out of the kitchen. And we see behind her the shadow of Ghostface Killer, the guy in the Scream whole costume. We've all seen it. What it looks like.
You've seen it. Listener, you've definitely seen it.
Listener, if you haven't seen it, you're fucking lying. you've seen it. We see him or it. I'm just going to say him. We're going to say him.
That's fine.
Runs by in the background. She, meanwhile, sees outside that her house is like in the middle of nowhere. Where does this movie take place?
I don't know, actually, but
California?
I don't know, but they all live on like in these houses that are like on big stretches of property with no neighbors, like every single person. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, she's like sort of in the middle of nowhere. But we see she's clearly home alone, but we see in the distance she sees a car coming towards her house, and we assume it's her parents coming home. So she like sneaks out. She sees that the killer's in her house, manages to get away from him and sort of sneak outside. But he finds her and he stabs her. Stabs her to death. Meanwhile, her popcorn burns. Starts a fire in the kitchen. We see her parents come home and they're like, oh my gosh, what the fuck happened? Where's our daughter? They walk outside and they see their daughter, Casey, also gutted, like Steve, and hanging from their tree. She's super dead. And that's the end of Drew Barrymore in this movie. And I imagine it would have been quite shocking if you went there expecting to see a Drew Barrymore movie. Yeah, pretty wild opening scene. Very good. Very scary. Great. Okay, cut two. Now we're meeting all our main characters. So, Sydney is Neve Campbell. So we cut to this this same night, presumably. Sydney is in her bedroom looking like remarkably virginal, like ponytail with a scrunchie, a like flowery, flouncy nightgown dress, like very clearly like the sweet girl.
Right.
She hears something, goes out to her window, and her boyfriend Billy pops up, scares her, but it's just her boyfriend. This is Skeet Ulrich, a very, very hot, very, very young
Skeet
Ulrich.
Smoking hot.
Boy,
ooh,
do we.
I screamed it.
Smoking hot. No question. No poll. You guys get it. You guys get it. Very much young Johnny Depp vibes aesthetically in this movie, too. We won't talk about what we think about him as a man, but look, also hot. So he pops up, scares her. She screams. Her dad knocks on her bedroom door because he heard her scream. She answers the door. Billy has hidden. Her dad essentially says, lets her know that he's going to be at a conference all weekend. She knows. He's just like reminding her, I'm going to be gone this weekend. Here's the hotel I'm staying at. She's like, okay. Love you, Dad. Thanks. Good night. Dad leaves. Billy pops back up. And he's like, I just wanted to visit you. It occurred to me I'd never snuck through your bedroom window. He said, I was watching The Exorcist on TV and it made me think of you. She's like, what made you think of me? And he said, well, yeah, you know, because they edit out all the good stuff. You know, it's kind of like our relationship. We started off really hot and heavy. We were R-rated, you know, right on our way to NC-17. But now we're sort of edited for TV.
What a dick.
So he's pressuring her to have sex with him. And she's...
Points for subtlety, though. Like, what... Or, like, weird...
Well, he's going
like,
to lose
really...
those points. He's going to lose those points pretty fast. And just so you know, the subtlety...
And I mean that sarcastically. It's just like, yeah. What a weird thing to say.
It's weird. It's very weird to tell your girlfriend she reminded... You thought of her while watching The Exorcist because your relationship has been edited for content. Yeah, and he's like, no, I was just thinking about you, and you know, I don't want, I'm not going to break your underwear rule, but I thought maybe we could do some over the clothes stuff. That's literally the line.
Oh boy.
And she goes, yeah, okay, we could do that. They get on her bed, they make out for literally like 3 seconds, and she's like, okay, good night. and he goes and like goes to sneak out her window, and he's like, you see what you do to me? This classic like fucking fucked up dude line of like, come on, you're driving me crazy. So you see what you do to me? She's like, before he leaves, she goes, well, would you settle for maybe a PG-13 relationship? And then she flashes him, and then he calls her a tease and leaves. Super fun. You love it.
Oh, what a healthy relationship.
It's really healthy. They're having fun. Both people are. Totally. next morning at school, Sydney shows up. Everyone is talking about the murders that happened the night before. There are cops at her school, a bunch of reporters from different stations. We see Courtney Cox's character. She's a reporter. We don't get fully introduced to her yet, but she's there. She's reporting on the murders. Sydney sort of looks at her and we feel some dislike there, but we sort of move on. Sydney's friend, Tatum, interesting name, played by Rose McGowan, is telling her what happened and that the murders that happened last night, telling Sydney, and goes, I mean, it's the worst crime we've had in this town since, and then looks at Sydney and stops talking. So awkward. We get the impression, awkward, something has happened here. we just get a nice little moment where we see that Henry Winkler is the principal of their school. How fun. Because Sydney is called in to be, they're calling all the students in one by one to question them, the sheriff, about the murders, about where they were last night. They call Sydney in, and the sheriff and the deputy, whose name is Dewey, played by David Arquette. He is also her friend Tatum's older brother. So just some fun dynamics that happen there. But they call her in, and they're clearly like, sorry to have to do this to you again, Sydney. It's clear she is familiar with the sheriff. She's made familiar with being questioned in this way. So that moment, they don't actually suspect her of anything. It's pretty brief, but they're like, sorry, we're questioning everybody. Sorry about this. After we cut quickly to Sydney and her friends having lunch or just hanging out after they've all been questioned, they're sort of all still chatting about it. Her group of friends are Billy, her boyfriend, Tatum's boyfriend, Stu, played by Matthew Lillard, and Randy, played by Jamie Kennedy. So that's that like core group.
I just want to point out that these are the same character tropes that this movie and Cabin in the Woods have a lot of similarities. So they are the virgin, the whore, the athlete, the scholar, and the fool. And those apply here too. And it's just fun. Both Scream and Cabin in the Woods are making fun of the characters and the tropes, like aware of them, subverting them, having fun with them.
That's so fun. So Nev Campbell, Sydney's the virgin, Tatum's the whore, Stu is the fool.
Yep. I know Jamie Kennedy is the scholar, which doesn't quite make sense, but it's because he knows everything about the movies. So he's the like go-to knowledge guy.
Scholar. And so then the athlete, or at least like the he's like the hot guy.
Yeah.
Billy Skeet is the hot guy.
Yep.
And as previously stated, he is hot.
He is hot.
He is hot. So they're all talking, chatting afterwards. Stu is going on about how like, oh, it was definitely, they didn't question you guys at heart because it was definitely a man. Oh, this murder could have only been done by a man. And they're like, oh, that's so sexist. Stu is being really crass and gross, and like making jokes about being gutted. And
too soon.
Way too soon. Wait till you hear what happened to Sydney before this, because it'll really be too soon. And Randy's like, wait, Stu, didn't you date Casey before she dated Steve? And he's like, yeah, for like a minute. And he's like, didn't she dump you for Steve? And Tatum's like, no, you dumped her for me, right? And he's like, yeah, I was with Tatum last night anyway, whatever. So they're like joshing with each other, but also like
casually accusing each other of murder.
Casually accusing each other of murder. Yeah.
Casually being like, you're capable of getting another human being. But I think that you might have
killed someone. yeah, we learned that Randy's a huge movie buff. He works at a video store. He's like kind of nerdy in like a movie way. Mm. Then we just cut to Sydney getting off the school bus at home. She's home alone. Her dad's already gone at his conference. Talks to Tatum on the phone. She's going to spend the night at Tatum's this weekend. Or starting that night, she's going to be sleeping at Tatum's house. Tatum says, I'll come pick you up at this time. And then she reveals, Sydney's like, you know, it just feels like deja vu all over again. All the cops, the reporters. It's around this moment that we learn that her mother was murdered, raped and murdered a year ago.
Oh, awful.
So, yeah, pretty awful. She falls asleep on her couch. The phone rings. I think first it's Tatum. Tatum calls and is like, I'm running late. Sorry. And she's like, okay. Then maybe she falls asleep. I don't know. Whatever. The phone rings. She expects that it's Tatum. It is.
Hello, Sydney.
I can't do the voice again. Can I do the voice again? I think I lost it. Whatever. It's the killer. he's like, do you like scary movies? Doing the same sort of voice. I'm imagining a listener
being like, well, who's this now? Who's this voice now?
Who's this new person? Give me a name. she thinks it's Randy. Her initial instinct is like, okay, Randy.
Right.
Very funny. yeah, okay, I like, you know, oh, you're a murderer. I don't know. She like thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
Also, because they don't know the details of the phone call from the
right.
She doesn't know to be
afraid of strangers calling. Yeah.
She doesn't know to be afraid of this yet, but she thinks it's Randy, but eventually starts to get scared. He asks if she likes scary movies and she's like, no, it's always the same stupid thing. Like a dumb girl with big boobs who like runs upstairs instead of running out the front door. They're insulting. And he's like, well, I'm on your front porch. So she like walks out to the very scary scene where she like opens the door and walks around on her porch, looking around. Nobody comes. But she's starting to get freaked out. And then he pops out of the closet, Ghostface, and attacks her. He's the big knife every time. She finally manages to get away from him, goes up the stairs, gets into her bedroom, locks the door. And he's trying to break his way into her bedroom through the locked door. It's on the second story. She's screaming. She goes to call 911. The phone line is down. She does a very smart thing that I didn't know you could do, which is on her computer, she like types in to call 911 and her computer calls 911 somehow. I don't know. Manages to place a 911 call. And I think the killer maybe sees that 911 has been called. Anyway, the killer stops trying to come in her room. She looks and he's not there anymore. And then up her window, Billy pops up. Another jump scare. She is so relieved. She like hugs him and is like, Billy, oh my God. He's like, I heard screaming. She's like, oh my God, oh my God. He's here, the killer, he's here. And he's like, it's okay. And he drops a cell phone. And so she, and I guess this is 1996. Not everyone had cell phones. So that was alarming, I guess.
Yeah.
She starts backing away from him, like really freaked out because all this has been happening from a phone call. And so she runs down the stairs and away from him. And he's like, Sid, what are you doing? It's fine. Opens the front door. And Dewey is standing there holding the mask up because he had found the costume. But that's another jump scare. Cause she screams and thinks it's him. It's Dewey. And he's like, no, it's okay. Cops have arrived. They arrest Billy. And he's like, it wasn't me. But he's the only person there. And they found the costume, like, not worn on the ground. Courtney Cox's character's name is Gail Weathers. She's a reporter. She shows up at Sydney's house and is like, Sydney, trying to get the scoop. Sydney gets away to go to the station to be questioned about what happened. We get a little bit of Courtney Cox, Gail's character, when she fat shames her cameraman because she had told him to get out of the van and start shooting what was happening. And she's like, when I tell you to hurry up, that means like get your fat lard ass out of the van, and it's awful. And then they're like friends later.
She's a bitch, I'd say. That's when we're like introduced to her as she is like a vulture bitch with like no, she does not care about
tabloid reporter. Yeah,
she like cares about getting the story. She does not care about the sensitivity of anybody's feelings around their, you know, family trauma. Members being murdered last year. She's just
or
like,
you or yourself maybe being murdered. She's just like, what happened, tell me. And like Mike in your face, very like aggressive. Yeah, she's a bitch. We go to the station. They're trying to contact Sid's dad because, you know, his daughter almost got murdered. They can't reach him. And he's like, he's not at the hotel he said he was at, but we'll track him down. Don't worry, we'll find him. Meanwhile, the sheriff is questioning Billy and Billy's dad. And he's like, what are you doing with a cell phone? And Billy's like, lots of people have cell phones nowadays. And they're like, check the phone record. You'll see that I didn't make those calls. And they're like, OK, well, we can't. The results won't come through until the morning. So they're holding Billy overnight. Sid clearly thinks that it's Billy. He gets like taken, you know, into custody or whatever when she's sitting in the room. It's like, Sid, you know me, tell them it wasn't me. And she's like, won't look at him, and is just crying. They've also been dating for like 2 years, they said at the beginning, so this is not a new relationship. Yeah. But you know, not
yeah,
great.
The fact that she immediately thought like, yeah, it could be
him. Could be him. My boyfriend could be him. There's a fun little back and forth with this. So Tatum comes to get Sid and take her to their house, which is where she's staying that night. There's a fun back and forth where Tatum's like, Dewey, are you done questioning her? I need to take her home. And he's like, mom told you when I'm wearing the uniform, I'm a man of the law and you have to respect me. She's like, okay, Deputy Dewey. Like, and all the other cops are laughing at him. And it's like, very cute. David Arquette is super likable in this movie. He's like a little doofy sweetie. But he's like takes Sid out the back entrance of the station, because at this point, a bunch of reporters, including Gale Weathers, have showed up now at the police station. Because Sid was, you know, the hottest story last year. She had this salacious murder happen in her family, and now it's back again. So there's all these reporters. Yeah, it's awful. She's in high school.
That's fucked.
But so Dewey says, you know, take Sidney out the back door so that you can avoid all that out front. So they go out the back door. Gale Weathers knows there's a back door, goes around the alley, tries to interview her, sees them coming out, and is like, Sidney, tell me about what happened tonight. Sidney asks, how's your book coming? And Gale goes, really well. I'll send you a copy. And Sidney punches her in the face.
Oh, hell yeah. I love that.
Yeah, pretty cool. Sidney does not like Gale.
Gale's clearly writing a book about her dead mother.
Yeah, that is the implication. So then they're at Tatum's house. They're in their little twin beds in Tatum's bedroom. Very 90s high school girls having a sleepover. Tatum's mom comes in, and I mean, God love her. She doesn't know what she's doing, but she comes in. She's like, Sidney, honey, there's a phone call for you. At which point you're like, No, don't make this girl answer the fucking phone. She's like, is it my dad? And she's like, no, it's not your dad, but it's someone who asked for you. And so Sidney answers the phone, and he's like, oh, hi, Sidney. Wow. Yeah, I know you put locked Billy away, but looks like you got the wrong guy again. What does this mean? What does this mean? Sidney screams. They like hangs up the phone, like, oh, boy, don't give that girl a phone call. Come on. She's dealt with enough. But that's all that happens there. The killer does not show up. He just places that phone call. So next morning in Tatum's kitchen, the news is on. They are doing a news story about how 1 year ago, the girl who was, you know, Sidney's mom was raped and murdered 1 year ago. The man who did it is currently on death row thanks to Sidney's testimony. His name is Cotton something. I don't know. Weird name. But he is on death row. The guy who raped and murdered her mom has been caught thanks to Sidney. Dewey reveals that Billy's phone record was clear, that he didn't make those calls, and so he's been released. So we go to school. There are reporters again all over the front lawn. This time Sidney goes up to Gale, and there's a fun moment where Gale's been like hounding her like crazy since the beginning of the movie, but she goes to walk up to Gale's van, and Gale goes, stop right there, because she got punched in the face and is like now afraid of Sidney. She's like, I don't want to fight you. I just want to talk to you. So we learn, yeah, Gale is writing a book about her mom's murder. And she's writing it about the fact that Gale thinks Cotton, the person that is on death row, is innocent and was framed for the murder. Mm. And Sidney's like, you called me a liar. You're like spreading all this hateful stuff and saying that this rapist and murderer is an innocent man. And Gale's like, I think that you're wrong. I don't think that he did it. I've had many conversations with him. I think that these murders that are happening right now are related to that. I think that there's an innocent man in prison and the real murderer is walking free. And catches like a look in Sidney's eye, and she goes, you're not so sure anymore, are you? Like, you're not sure that he really did it. Sidney's like, I saw him like wearing his jacket leaving. Apparently Sidney like saw the murder happen, or the aftermath of the murder. And Gale's like, well, you saw someone wearing his jacket, and I think someone framed him for that murder. Anyway, little bit of doubt now has been put in Sidney's mind about that.
I also want to just mention that the transition song is the Peaky Blinders theme song. I play it really frequently throughout. It's Red Right Hand by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Fun.
That would be really like disorienting for me watching that.
It is kind of bizarre because, yeah, I like didn't remember
so
that.
So heavily associate it with Peaky Blinders. Mm-hmm.
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders. And then Peaky Blinders starts. we jump right into an episode.
Ooh, fun mashup.
It's a fun mashup. But Gale like gets all excited when Sidney leaves, and she's like, oh my God, this is going to be like the story of the year. I'm going to sell so many fucking books. She says to Kenny, she's like, can you believe this? Like, I think that these murders are related. And that means that, like, if I'm right about this, she goes, we could save a man's life. The guy, the innocent guy on death row. And she goes, can you imagine how many books I'm going to sell? So she's like, still kind of a bitch. But honestly, kind of fun.
She's fun.
She's fun. We don't hate her. We're in school, where our lockers, a guy and someone in the full scream head to toe ghost face costume, like, runs through the school like, ah, screaming. Clearly it's just a prank, but, you know, scary, not fun. Everyone in this movie is alarmingly casual about the fact that their classmates were gutted, and they're just like, isn't that crazy? Glad it wasn't me. Anyway, haha, funny, funny, funny. Really, really aren't taking it seriously at all.
Yeah.
But Sydney sort of like tries to run away from that, or not, she's not scared, but she's just like, man, fuck this, and goes down the hall, runs right into Billy, who, and she's clearly is still a little bit afraid of him. Like, she's on edge, and the way she interacts with him is like a little still. Sydney's like, you don't think it was me, right? Like, they released me. My phone was clear. You know, it wasn't me. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, I know. I'm just like, you know, I'm sorry. I'm on edge. And he's like, no, it's OK. You know, I have a girlfriend who would rather accuse me of being a killer than touch me.
Very cool.
Oh, my God.
Love this shaming.
Look, Skeet is two things in this movie. Hot and bad. and that's what you have to know. He's hot and bad. And he's like, she's like, what? How could you say that? That's not true. He said, you know, ever since your mom, you've just like been really different. And she's like, yeah, it was fucking insanely traumatic. My mom was murdered. He was like, yeah, a year ago.
Oh my God.
And she goes, yeah, a literal year ago. A year ago tomorrow, my mom was murdered. And he's like, well, I think it's about time you got over it. I literally think those are the words he says, that it's about time you got over it.
Not an empathetic man.
Not an empathetic man. He wants to fuck his girlfriend.
Ew.
So he deserves to, because that's how it works. So she is mad and runs into the girls' bathroom, where he can't go. We cut to, we see a little moment with the principal, with Henry Winkler. I don't know his principal name. He's Henry Winkler. He expels the two students who are wearing the scream masks and takes them off of them. And they're like, this is not a fucking joke. Your two classmates were murdered. This isn't funny. You're expelled. But this scene is wild and very freaky. He's holding like one of those huge pairs of scissors that are like only in schools, that are silver and like really black handle, like it's huge school scissors, and he keeps like putting them in his, because he goes to cut the mask up, because he's like, this is so insensitive and gross, but is like holding the scissors up in their faces, and the sound effect of the scissors is really intense, and you keep thinking someone's gonna get stabbed, and like he's like being freaky with the scissors. Freaky with the scissors. You know I don't like scissors. But it's weird. It's like a tense moment, but that nothing happens. He just expels them. Meanwhile, in the bathroom, Sydney's in the stall, and she overhears two mega bitches talking about, I don't even believe Sydney that happened. She probably made it all up for attention. Or maybe she's the murderer. She's so fucked up because she watched her mom get killed, so now she's all fucked up. She's probably a slut just like her mom. This is like real things that these two girls are saying. She watched her mom die, and it like really messed her up.
Teenagers are bad. They are bad.
Teenagers are bad. teenagers are bad. But they're basically just like calling her mom a slut and saying that she's a lying murderer. which she's upset about. Sydney's upset about hearing that.
That is so awful. I would like to think that we're slowly but surely teenagers are getting better. I think teenagers are not as mean as they used to be.
I think they are different, but I don't know any.
I don't know. I hope. Okay. Outside the school, we see Gail now trying to question or like get information out of Dewey, and starts flirting with him. And that's fun also because we know that eventually they got married in real life.
This is where they met, I think.
This is where they met and fell in love, and it really is nice, and they have really good chemistry, and apparently they're also still on good terms, even though they're divorced. I texted Joel while watching immediately and was like, I really hope that they're still friends, because I love to see them fall in love.
There was part of me that thought you were going to be like, I texted Courtney while I was watching just to see like how she was feeling.
I texted Court. I just really quick texted Court. Courtney.
Hey, how are you and David? Courtney, how,
we're on texting level of friendship, but I need to ask, how are you and your ex? I forget to ask. So she's flirting with Dewey. She like mentions that her main demographic for her show is men 18 to 24. And he reveals that he's 25 and he's like, so, you know, I was 24 for a whole year. He's into her. She's like kind of famous.
Cute.
Famous in their zone. And he's like, you're much more beautiful in person. Anyway, he's into her. They make an announcement that school is canceled for the rest of the day and that there will be a citywide curfew starting that night. Stu decides he's going to host a party to celebrate not having to be in school and not and because he's an asshole. he's the fool archetype. And
Matthew
Tatum
Lillard,
is dating
though,
him.
Is so great. Ugh.
He is so good in this movie.
This was,
it,
I mean,
it's
and
like
this
you
was,
have to see it.
This was his prime time. He was in a bunch of stuff around this time. This was golden Matthew Lillard years. And I miss him. I miss this time.
He's capable of doing crazy things with his face.
His face is incredibly expressive.
His face is like made out of Play-Doh.
I think I appreciate him more now. I remember as a kid, like really not liking him, like thinking he was like,
because
really
he's
disgusting.
Always obnoxious and everything. I think
he's like plays. Yeah. Like, and stupid, like, like so much
but he's yeah, so good
but
at
it's
it.
Great, it's so good. But so he's gonna host a party that night to celebrate. We cut to back in the principal's office. The killer comes and murders him. I don't have to tell anymore, it's pretty brief. He gets murdered.
Henry Winkler.
We see him get murdered. So sad. What a nice man. I think, well, no, I know, I text him. Great. We see later Sydney is talking to Tatum and finally expresses a shred of doubt. Just like that, you know, it's just sort of got in my head. Like, if I am wrong about that, him killing my mom, like, what else am I wrong about? What does that mean? And Tatum's like, you don't get into in your head. Like, let's have fun tonight. We see the Ghostface killer run by in the bushes. Okay. Not a great sign. It's still daylight though, it's still the afternoon, so the whole group of friends goes to the video store where Randy works to rent a movie for that night. Randy is talking to Stu, saying that he still suspects that it could be Billy who's the murderer, and he's like, it's standard horror movie shit, like it's gotta be the boyfriend,
right?
But Stu's like, oh, that just because you want to go out with Sydney. And he's like, I don't know, do you think I have a chance with her? And Stu like laughs in his face and is like, no. Stu's like, well, what about her dad? I think it's probably her dad. Like, why can't they reach him? He's gone missing. And Randy's like, the dad's a red herring. I'm telling you, this is like horror movie tropes. It's just trying to distract you.
That's fun.
Yeah. And we're really playing into the whole thing, and he's like, I'm telling you, it's Billy, we can't get, you know, distracted. And then Billy comes up behind him being creepy as fuck. Like, Billy is scary. He's a scary dude.
Billy is a scary name too.
it really is. He's scary. So Billy like comes up behind him and he's like, hey, how do we know that you're not the killer? And Randy's like, yeah, man, I mean, if this were a scary movie, I'd be the prime suspect, which is also fun. We know what we're doing. Wink, 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 wink. But Randy does not like and does not trust Billy. Aside from the fact that he also wants to fuck Sydney, I guess. We see everyone locking up for curfew. The sheriff, meanwhile, tells Dewey that they traced the phone calls and that they came from Sydney's dad. And Dewey says, well, could the calls have been cloned? And the sheriff's like, look, we haven't done like the full investigation, but let's not tell Sydney anything until we're sure. Like, let's not, like, the sheriff's really sensitive to the fact that she's been through a lot and is like, let's like not involve her in this moment, but like, just be aware that that's where we're at right now.
Where is the dad?
They can't find him.
Do we know?
He was supposed to be at a conference. The police tried to track him down and couldn't. He's missing, essentially.
Okay.
But so now he's their prime suspect and they're thinking he's missing because he's committing murders.
Guilty.
Yeah, he's in a mask running around with a knife. So we go to Stu's party. We see outside of Stu's house, Gail pulls up with her news van. She and her camera guy, Kenny, pull up outside the party. She's relentless on the tale of this story. Dewey is also at the party just to keep watch on everyone, make sure they're okay. The sheriff tells him, like, hey, keep an eye on Sydney. And he's also, he's like a sweet guy, and it's his sister's friend. So he's watching at the party, but he sees the Gales there, and is, you know, really into her and sort of flirts with her. And he's like, I'm going to, like, go walk into the party and just make sure everything's okay. Do you, like, want to come with me? And she's like, yeah, oh my God, I would love to. And stashes, takes a, like, little video camera. So she goes into the party with him and stashes a camera in the house. So now they're getting footage of the entire party. So that's a win for Gail. Meanwhile, Stu asks Tatum if she can go grab them some more beers. She goes to the garage and she grabs a bunch of beers in the fridge. Her arms are full of beers. The door is locked behind her back into the house. So she's like, oh, that's annoying. Door's locked. Goes to open the, you know, garage door of suburban house where you got that electronic garage door that comes up. It starts moving up and then it stops and goes back down, turns around. Ghostface standing in at the door holding the button.
Uh-oh.
She also thinks it's Randy. Everybody thinks that it's Randy just playing tricks. So she's like, oh, very funny, Randy. You know, you better take that costume off. If Sid sees it, she's going to freak out, you know, because someone wearing that tried to kill her yesterday.
Also, like, is this costume just ubiquitous? Like, everyone can get their hands on one of these.
They did reveal earlier that they couldn't trace the costume because they're like, you can get this at any five. And it's just like a standard Halloween costume thing. Right. Yeah, but it is like, I guess everyone has it. So, yeah, so she's like, okay, Randy, let me through. And then he stabs her in the arm. So she's like, oh, this isn't Randy.
Not
this
Randy.
Is a real killer with a knife. So she tries. He's like coming up on her. She smashes a beer bottle on him. So she's got the advantage for a second. Tries to escape through a cat door or like a doggy door. Small.
Very small.
Small. Very small. Smaller than a woman's frame. door in the garage door, the electronic door. I mean, God love her. She's got to try to get out some way, but inevitably she gets stuck. Her bottom half is stuck outside her, like at her shoulder. She's like stuck hanging out of this cat door. He presses the button to lift the garage door up. So now she's stuck and hanging. Keeps going. I guess they're strong enough to do this. It slices through her neck and kills her.
Oh,
head doesn't come all the way off, but that's where she is died from a neck injury.
Bad death.
Not good. Not good.
No.
So now she's just hanging up there out of the cat door, dead. Meanwhile, Billy shows up at the party. Good old Billy. You love to see him. He shows up being like, Sid, I just want to talk to you. I guess they haven't talked since he told her to get over her mom's death. And
Jesus Christ.
Stu's like, yeah, go. You guys can go talk like in my parents' room. They're out of town. Go like, you know, go talk in my parents' room. And they're like, aha, very smooth, Stu. And Sydney's like, no, we do need to talk. Like, I'll talk to you. That's fine. So they go upstairs. Meanwhile, Gail goes back out to the van and they start. She and Kenny, her cameraman, start watching the footage of the party. They're like, oh, awesome. We have like a camera in there. They realize because in the video, she's still walking out of the house, but she's at the van watching that. They're like, oh, we have like a 30-second delay. But they're like, no, oh, whatever. That's fine. We'll she goes like, let's just record it. That's fine. Upstairs, Billy and Sydney both apologize to each other. I don't know, Sydney. Don't think you needed to apologize, but fine. And then Sydney tells him he's right and she's ready to have sex with him. So they get ready to have sex. Downstairs, there's a whole group of people, teens, having a party, watching a horror movie. Is it prom night that they're watching? A Jamie Lee Curtis horror movie.
It's Halloween.
Oh, it's Halloween. They're watching Halloween. Mm-hmm. And Randy, the big movie buff, they're all really anxious to see Jamie Lee Curtis's tits. They keep being like, oh, when are we going to see your tits? And he's like, we don't see your tits yet because in these movies, she's always the virgin, which is why she survives. So he like gets up and he's like, look, let me tell you guys the rules of horror movies. Number one, only virgins survive at the end. So you can never have sex. Number two, you can never drink or do drugs. And they're all holding beers. So we're like, we're all drinking. And then he's like, three, never say I'll be right back, because that's how you know that you'll never be right back. And then Stu goes like, I'm going to go get another beer. I'll be right back. And they're all like, horror movie. Dewey, meanwhile, goes back out to the over to Gail's van because he's crushing real hard and says, hey, I just got a phone call about a report or an abandoned vehicle down the road. I got to go check it out. Like, you want to come with me? And she's like, yeah, I would love to. I'm trying to get the scoop.
I'll do anything for that scoop.
Upstairs, Sydney and Billy are making out. She looks like she doesn't want to be doing it.
I wouldn't if I were her. That's for sure.
And she's sort of trying to stop it, but then leans back in and goes for it again. But it's not good to see. Cut back downstairs. The phone rings. We see Randy answer it. And it is a phone call from I don't know who telling them that the principal has been murdered. And guess what? Has been gutted and is hanging outside of the school.
Oh, boy.
At which news, all the other teens, Randy's like shaken up. Not great news. All the other teens in the house go, oh, hell yeah, let's go see it before they take him down. Yeah, fuck the principal. We hate school. We're teens. This is normal.
That's crazy. They're a bunch of sociopaths.
It's insane. And they all leave. They all leave to go check out their dead principal, except for Randy. Who stays, and Stu, who went to go get some beer, and Tatum, who's dead. They don't know that yet. But so all those teens like get in their cars and race off to go see the principal. Gail and Dewey, we cut to, they're walking down the road to find this abandoned car. And the teens leaving the house are flying down the road in their cars, like zooming to the school. And they are going to hit them walking down the road. So Dewey at the last minute pulls Gail out of the way into the woods. And then she kisses him.
Woo-hoo.
And he's very sweet and naive, and he like clearly has been wanting this his whole fucking life, but he stops because he's like, I can't, I'm on duty. Which she thinks is like very funny and cute. But right next to them, they see the abandoned car. So they're like, oh shit, they get up. He looks at it and says, this is, I don't remember her last name. It's Sydney's dad's car. So he's
Prescott.
Like, oh fuck, it's Prescott. This is Neil Prescott's car. That's what the hell is he doing here? So they go to run back towards the house. They're like a little ways down the road to find this car. So they're like, oh shit, we have to get back to the house. This is not good. He's our prime suspect. His car is here. We cut back upstairs. Sydney and Billy have just had sex, and Billy's sitting on the floor by the bed. Sydney's on the bed, like sort of putting her clothes back on, and says, hey, what was your phone call? And he says, what? And she says, well, I know when you get arrested you get one phone call, so who was your phone call? And he goes, it was my dad. She says, no, the sheriff called your dad. I saw him. And he says, well, he didn't answer when I called him.
Uh-oh.
And she says, okay. She's like, she looks like she doesn't really believe him, but she goes, and then she starts like laughing as if she's telling a joke. She's like, you know, it would just be and be really clever for you to use your one phone call to call me so that I would think the killer couldn't possibly be you because you were in jail. And he looks suspicious as fuck when she says that.
Oh, no.
But stands up and goes to her and goes like, what do I have to do to convince you that I am not a killer? And then he gets stabbed.
Ghostface pops out.
By the killer. Ghostface. Ghostface pops up. Stabs him a bunch of times.
That's a good way. That's a good way to convince her.
Stabs him a bunch of times, seemingly to death. And he sort of collapses. So now Sydney's running away from the killer again, is running through the house, runs through a room that I guess is Stu's bedroom. It's it's like cluttered, but there's like a doll hanging upside down from the ceiling. It's like a freaky, weird room.
Stu's a freak.
I didn't notice it when I was watching last night, probably because I was like, I'm not scared. What's this text say? But when I was rewatching today, I saw that room and was like, this is not a nice room to be in. But goes to the room, puts down like a surfboard to try to keep the door shut. The killer gets in. So she goes out the window, out like outside the second story window to try to like get away, has nowhere to go. He reaches through to get her. She falls down, looks in front of her and sees the garage door where her friend Tatum is hanging dead, freaks out, looks back up to the window where the killer just was. He is not there anymore. Not a good sign. Cut to, so she like starts running away. Cut to downstairs. Randy is watching a scene from the scary movie, and and Ghostface is like behind him, but he can't see because he's watching the movie. And it's a fun moment where he's saying, Jamie, like talking to Jamie Lee Curtis in the movie, but his name is also Jamie, which I thought was a fun little one too, where he's like, Jamie, Jamie, look behind you. He's right behind you. Jamie, come on. Behind you, Jamie. But it's Laris the killer anyway. So there's like double meaning.
Fun.
Clever.
Fun.
But we cut away to Sydney running up to the news van where right now it's just Kenny, the camera guy in there because Gail and Dewey are still down the road. So she like opens the door and comes in and is like, the killer, he's like, he's in the house. And they look on the screen, the footage they have in the house, and they see the killer standing behind Randy, and they're like, oh my god, Randy, like there's the killer's right behind you. And they see on the screen the killer walk out of the house and not kill Randy. And so they open the van door, and Kenny looks out towards the door, sees the front door wide open, and goes, there's a 30-second delay. And his throat gets slit because that 30-second delay was long enough for the killer to get to the van.
Oh, no.
So Kenny's down. The killer tries to go after Sid, but she gets away. Dewey and Gail run back to the house. They make it there. They don't see this happen, but they've made it back like a second later. Dewey says, is there a phone in the van? Use it to call 911. So he goes into the house with his gun to see what's going on. Gail goes into the van to call 911. She opens the van, sees blood pooling everywhere outside the van, calls for Kenny. He's not there. Goes successfully calls 911, I think, from the van. And then Randy pops up next to her driver window, and she freaks out and hits him in the head with the phone and knocks him out and goes to drive away. We see that Kenny is on the hood of her car. And she's like screaming and there's blood everywhere on her windshield, and she has this phone where she's like, Kenny, I'm really sorry, but you need to get the fuck off the hood of my car, and like drives the newsman. Drives down the street. Sydney comes out on the road to be like, hey, pick me up.
Help.
But Gail is freaking out, and she comes out of nowhere, so she swerves to avoid hitting her, runs down a hill, crashes pretty bad into a tree.
Big bummer.
So Sydney has to run back to the house. Sydney runs up to the house and is calling for Dewey. Dewey opens the front door and walks out, and she's like, Dewey! And he goes, Sydney! And falls forward with a knife stabbed in his back. Killer comes up behind him, pulls a knife out of Dewey's back, comes after Sydney. Sydney locks herself in the police van and then like gets into the car and locks the doors, and then the killer sits up in the driver's side door holding the keys that he took from Dewey and just being like swinging them in front of her face tauntingly.
And then he like drops down, right? He like drops to the floor, and so she he's outside her window.
And she like goes to lock the doors from the inside, and then she locks one door and he unlocks the other one, and she locks the door and he unlocks the other one, and then she looks around and he's not there. He loves to do that. He loves to just disappear and all of a sudden not be there anymore, which is way scarier than still being there.
Yeah.
And so she's like looking around, and we see the trunk opening behind her, and he starts to try to come in through the back. She manages to escape. Oh, but when she's in the car, she also manages to radio her location on the police radio. She's like, I'm at this house, the killer's here. We don't hear a response, but presumably the call went through. She runs into the house, or she runs towards the house and picks up Dewey's gun off of him because he's laying, you know, potentially presumably dead on the front. Well, we already said that David Arquette's in Scream 5, so spoiler. But so he's laying on the ground, and she takes his gun off of him and turns around, and both Stu and Randy are now coming up to the door being like, Sid, oh my God, let us in. And she holds the gun up to both of them because she doesn't know who the fuck the killer is. He's wearing a full head to toe costume. She's just like, fuck everyone. Like, what the fuck is going on? And keeps holding, and they're both blaming each other. Randy's like, it's Stu. He like went crazy. And Stu's like, it's him. Like, let me in, Sid. Oh my God, please let me in. And she's just like, doesn't know what the fuck to do. So she locks them out of the house, has the gun. Then we see Billy come like stumbling down the stairs, like bleeding and like holding onto the rail and being like, Sydney. And he like stumbles down the stairs. She helps him up. And it's like, oh my God, I thought you were dead. And he's like, no, I've just been like, I'm stabbed. He doesn't say that.
I'm stabbed, Sid. I'm stabbed.
I'm just stabbed. He's like, it's okay. Here. And she like helps him up. And he's like, it's going to be okay. Here, give me the gun. She gives him the gun. He goes to open the door. And she's like, no, they're out there. He opens the door. He lets Randy in. And Randy goes, oh my God, you guys, it's Stu. He's gone mad. And Billy turns around and goes, we all go a little mad sometimes.
No!
And then shoots Randy!
What?
And reveals, he like takes a finger and like licks the blood off his shirt and reveals that it's cornstarch. So he's not hurt at all.
It was a trick.
Wow, he's really bad.
It was a mean trick, a dirty trick. Stu then comes into the house holding the voice box going, hi, Sydney.
What the fuck?
So it's both of them.
Two killers.
It's both of them.
What the fuck is the motive?
Two killers.
We're getting there.
Ready, Henley? So they come in, they sort of corner Sydney in this lovely kitchen with the big island. Bring her into the kitchen. She says, like, you guys are fucking crazy. You'll never get away with this. And they are like, well, we got away with framing Cotton and killing your mom.
Holy shit.
Yep. And
holy shit.
She's like, why the fuck? What is wrong with you? Why would you do that? And they're both acting like full on crazy now. Like, Billy has always been creepy, but now he's just like fully like, yay, she knows I'm a killer. I can just like be a crazy killer. He goes, it's a lot scarier when there's no motive, isn't it? Did Norman Bates have a motive? Maybe I'm just a psychopath.
What?
And they say, like, maybe we put your slut mother out of her misery. Like, the amount of times they call her mom a slut in this movie is fucking insane.
Wow, I wish she hadn't had sex with him. Wow, that really just does not make it better, does it? Yeah,
losing your virginity to the person who killed your mom is pretty bad.
It's not good. It's pretty much a worst case scenario.
I would be pretty upset, personally.
So yeah, he's like, oh, it's a lot scarier when there's no motive. Maybe I don't have a motive. Maybe I'm a psychopath. Or maybe your slut mom was fucking my dad, and that's the reason why my mom left and abandoned me.
Boo-hoo.
Maybe that's my motive. Is that a good enough motive for you?
Oh, definitely equal. Definitely equal crimes.
And then
equal
I wrote
crimes.
This line down because sure. It's really good. It's the sickest burn ever. He goes, maternal abandonment causes serious deviant behaviors. It certainly fucked you up. It made you have sex with a psychopath.
Oh, God. He's evil.
What?
So
he
he's like
so
taunting
evil.
Her about the fact that she just had sex with him. It's horrible.
Yuck.
Oh, it's
yuck,
evil.
Yuck,
it's
yuck,
really
yuck.
Bad.
And then Stu goes, because Stu's like, his vibe as a murderer is just like, I'm crazy. That's why I kill people, because I'm having a good time.
He's unhinged.
And Stu goes, yeah, that's right. You're not a virgin. Now you got to die. Those are the rules.
Ew.
And then so he's holding the gun. He's holding Dewey's gun, and he puts it down. And he goes, oh, Sid, I got to go get, this is the best part. Sid, this is the best part. I got to go get the surprise. There's a big surprise ending.
I'm loving this impression. It's really good.
I hate it.
Spot on.
Goes into the other room and brings her dad in, who is, his mouth is duct taped. He's tied up. He's clearly been beaten up. They put the voice box that he had just used in her dad's pocket. The cell phone in her dad's pocket. They're like, this is the best part. We cloned the phone calls or his cell phone. So it seemed like the calls were coming from him. It's perfect. 1 year after the murder of his wife, he went crazy and killed all the kids in the town and killed you and then killed himself. And so they're going to shoot him and make it look like a suicide. and they're like, we're going to be the only two survivors. He left us for dead. So then they stab each other to make their story plausible.
Oh.
So Billy gets a knife and Stu's like, yeah, Billy, come on. He's like being really crazy. He's like, right here, right here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Billy stabs him, I think, deeper and harder than he anticipated. So then he takes a knife and goes to stab Billy. And then so he stabs Billy pretty hard because he's pissed that Billy stabbed him pretty hard. And so then Billy takes a knife and stabs him like four times.
Oh, they just do a little
stab back and forth for a minute.
That's enough, man. That's too many times.
Yes. Yeah. Man, Billy, that's enough, man. Because he, now at this point, he's like really stabbed a lot. Stu has now been stabbed too much, one might say. And Billy goes, all right, just grab the fucking gun so we can finish this. Stu goes to grab the gun and it's gone. It is no longer on the counter where he left it. And he goes, oh, we got a problem, man. And they're like, what the fuck? We have to find the fucking gun. And Gale Weathers to the rescue.
Oh, yeah.
Pointing the gun at them. And this is a very, like, this is a very funny sort of cheesy, but like perfect moment where he goes, oh, I've got an ending for you. How about the savvy reporter foils your plan, finds the gun, shoots you guys, and it all works out or something like that. And Sydney from the kitchen goes, I like that ending. It's very funny.
Oh, my God.
Cheeky,
it's cheeky, cheeky, cheeky. Gale goes to shoot. Nothing happens. And Billy kicks her in the stomach. Knocks her out. She falls on top of Dewey and he goes, yeah, it works a lot better when the safety isn't on. And he holds, points a gun up to her head and says, this is Gale Weathers signing off. But before he shoots her, Stu goes, Billy, oh no, man. They've taken their eyes off of Sydney. They turn around. She's gone. Sydney and the dad are both gone. So they're like, fuck, we have to find her. And now Billy is like pissed. He's been pretty cool, calm, collected this whole time. You know, murdery, psychopathy. But now he's like, you bitch. Like, he's like screaming. He's like, where the fuck are you, you bitch? Get back here. The phone rings. It's Sydney on the voice box being like, oh, do you guys like scary movies? And like taunting them. And he's like, bitch, where the fuck are you? And she's like, oh, I just called the police and they're about to come and arrest your fucking asses. Meanwhile, Stu is dying because he's been stabbed too many times.
He's like, oh,
Billy's like, God. Billy's ordering him around. He's like, Stu, we gotta like fucking find her. And he's like, I can't, man. I'm bleeding out, man.
I'm losing a lot of blood.
I'm losing a lot of blood. I'm feeling woozy, man. But meanwhile, so Billy like gives Stu the phone. And so Stu's like still on the phone with Sydney. He's like, to really call the cops. And she's like, yeah, I really fucking did. He's like, oh, my parents are gonna be so mad.
Oh my God.
So stupid. Meanwhile, Billy has the knife and is like tearing the house apart and like tears a couch open and gets covered in feathers.
Tearing a couch open is really funny. Is he
Do you think she got inside the couch cushions? Like,
is he looking? Is he inside the cushions for Sydney?
What did she sew them back around herself? Like, no. But then he opens a closet, a more plausible place for a human to be. It's like a coat closet. There's a lot of stuff in it. And then we just see a big umbrella come through and stab him in the chest. He drops a gun. This ghost face killer comes out of the closet. Sydney rips the mask off, reveals that it's her. Billy is down on the ground, stabbed. But from up behind her, Stu comes in, tackles her. So they start fighting. They end up sort of tumbling their way into the living room. Sydney gets the upper hand and pushes one of those like big, deep 1996 square televisions that are like wider than they are tall, you know, deeper than they are tall. Pushes it over Stu's head, both smashing his face and electrocuting him at the same time.
Cool.
So there goes Stu. Randy reappears being like, oh my God, he had gotten shot like in the shoulder, so he's okay. And she's like, oh my gosh, I thought you were dead. And he says, no, I've never been happier to be a virgin. Taking it back to our funny rules about the virgins can't die. But then Billy comes up, attacks Sid again, tackles her, and then lifts up the knife. And just as he's going to stab her, he gets shot. Gail shoots him successfully this time. And she goes, "Safety's off this time, fucker," or something like that, which is fun.
A lot of one-liners.
So then Sydney takes the gun from her. They all stand over Billy, who's laying down bloody on the ground. And Randy goes, "Be careful. This is the moment when the supposedly dead killer comes back for one last scare." And Billy's lying on the ground. And he goes, "Huh!" He just like pops up and literally like just like screams. And she shoots him right in the head and goes, "Not in my movie."
Oh, my God.
Then we cut to outside the house. The sun is rising. And Gail is talking to a new cameraman because hers died.
Swap him out.
Backup him out. Cameraman. And is like, "Okay, you've got this.
Anything for the scoop. Anything for the scoop."
Anything for the scoop. She's like, oh, beaten up, like bloody, fucked up. She's like, "This is Gail Weathers putting on the story of the century." It was, and like starts telling the story of what happened. And she like walks up to the house while there are like cops converging, and it's all end credits.
Oh my God.
We did it.
A perfect film.
That was great.
I love it so much. It's truly
so much fun.
It's super fun, and it is really scary, and everyone is so good in it. I just love it. I had a great time, and I will be rewatching it again. I think I meant what I said. It's super rewatchable.
I'll be watching Scream 2, about which I also know the killer because that was on at your house on Halloween 2. And
sorry.
So I also know, and that's helpful for me. No, I'm glad. It makes it easier for me to watch.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I think actually I'm realizing now that I saw the end of Scream 2 at your house, Sammy. So I thought, I was assuming that was going to be the end of Scream 1. And I was confused for the latter portion of this.
Would have been a hard left for us to get to the ending of Scream 2 at the end of Scream 1.
I was like, how's this? I don't know. One reason why it's like more of a fun, scary movie besides all the meta stuff and just like the ridiculousness of the characters is that one thing that makes scary movies more scary is when the people are like reacting in a real way to the stuff that's happening around them. And the fact that everyone is just like kind of so casual and like nonplussed about the fact that their friends
right.
are being murdered.
A lot of them seem
just
oblivious
like,
to the fear they should be in.
And to be fair, it's because some of them are the murderers. But
true.
But yeah, there's a lot of like a side characters who are really unfazed about the murders happening in their community.
Yeah.
I will also say I think there's something about like she makes it out and our like good guys do sort of eventually succeed. That makes it a little less scary too. It's like not trying to make you feel like shit, this movie, you know?
It's a happy ending as far as horror movies go.
Yeah. The killers are get their the just ending. Also it is surprising. It is surprising that it's like two of the friends.
It's
honestly.
It's definitely surprising that it's two of them. It's a very cool misdirect that they, like, quote-unquote, kill Billy, but then he's back, but then he is the kid. Like, they do a good job of the whole time being like, well, it's obviously him. He's so fucking creepy.
Right.
It's him, and then he dies, but then it's still him. Right. I do like that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's super clever. I mean, it's just, obviously, yeah, playing with all the tropes, but then making them feel fresh again. Like, this, I feel like, started a new wave of horror. Like, I Know What You Did Last Summer came after this, and I feel like the I guess I don't know enough about the teen slasher, but I feel like this really revitalized it in a new way because it was so successful because it's so fucking good.
It really is super fun. I'm very glad to have, you know, reached my nearly my 30s being able to watch Scream because it's really fun.
Proud
of
you.
I think it makes me want to watch Cabin in the Woods even more because I do think movies like this are the kind of scary movie that I could have fun with because it is about like this is like a roller coaster to me in terms of scary movies where it's like you're scared then it's a release then you're scared then it's a release then and you're laughing and it's fun as opposed to like
Hereditary.
Oh, everything is awful and I want to die.
I'm proud of you. I'm glad you watched it and I'm glad you liked it. Henley, I think you should watch it too.
Me too.
Maybe
just that Matthew Lillard performance in the end.
I did it. Oh, a pretty perfect representation, but you should maybe watch it.
That's true.
You pretty much already watched it.
I got enough Matthew Lillard through Emily, for sure. That was a spot on impression.
Thank you. Did we learn anything? What did we learn?
In the opening scene, I learned just don't have open windows. Get some curtains for your windows, always.
Buy curtains.
Don't hide in the couch cushion because the killer will look there.
The killer will look there. Do not sew yourself into the couch.
It may seem like a pretty safe place, but no, they're going to look there.
They're going to look there. And let me tell you what, the way they do it is by stabbing a deep, long hole all the way through. So if you're there, that is a bad way to go.
I would say mostly just don't date an asshole. That's a good one.
Yeah, don't.
Definitely
don't
date an asshole. He's such an asshole. And I don't, you know what? I don't care how hot he is. I said it.
I agree. I concur. I'll second that. Oh, God, I've been to too many city council meetings. I second that. I second that motion. Yeah, no, if your boyfriend is constantly a piece of shit to you, break up with him. If he's shaming you.
If he belittles the fact that your mom was murdered, that's a bad sign.
Really bad.
Real bad sign.
Break up with him.
Really bad. Especially if he's doing it so that you will have sex with him. Bad.
Big red flag.
Wow, I really enjoyed that.
Anything else, or should we choose a voice? There's Ghostface, or I was really liking that Stu voice too. So we have.
I'm gonna do Stu for sure. I'm gonna do Stu.
Okay, can we get another taste of it so we can?
Yeah, man. I don't know.
I'm losing a lot of blood, man.
I'm losing a lot of blood, man. You stab me too much, man. I don't know, something like that. Do you really call the cops? I'm sort of losing it, but.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you, Emily. You freaking killed it. And from all of us here.
Goodbye, man.
Goodbye, man.
Hi, friends. Sammy here. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you like the show, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate us and review us. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on social media. We are at TSDW Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And don't forget to tell us your freaking Enneagram types in the comments. See you next week. Bye.